Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading from chapter 6, new chapter, 7th canto, of course. And this chapter is entitled, Prahlad Instructs His Demoniac Schoolmates. So I will read the chapter introduction, and then we'll chant text 1 together, which is a very famous verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so this is the chapter introduction. This chapter describes Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his class friends. In speaking to his friends, who were all sons of demons, Prahlad Maharaj stressed that every living entity, especially in human society, must be interested in spiritual realization from the very beginning of life. When human beings are children, they should be taught that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the worshipable deity for everyone. One should not be very much interested in material enjoyment. Instead, one should be satisfied with whatever material profits are easily attainable. And because the duration of one's life is very short, one should utilize every moment for spiritual advancement. One may wrongly think, in the beginning of our lives, let us enjoy material facilities, and in old age we may become Krishna conscious. Such materialistic thoughts are always useless because in old age one cannot be trained in the spiritual way of life. Therefore, from the very beginning of life, one should engage in devotional service, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. This is the duty of all living entities. Material education is infected by the three modes of material nature, but spiritual education, by which there is a great need, for which there is a great need in human society, is transcendental. Prahlad Maharaj disclosed the secret of how he had received instructions from Narada Muni. By accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in parampara succession, one will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications. After Prahlad Maharaj's class friends had listened to Prahlad Maharaj, they inquired how he had become so learned and advanced. In this way, the chapter ends. Okay, so. Shri Paraduvacha Komara Achare Pragyo Dharmam Bhagavatan Iha Dolabam Manusam Janma Tadapi Adruvam Artadam Shri Paraduvacha Komala acharet pragyo dharmam bhagavatan iha dolabam manusam janma tarapi adruvam artadam shri paladu vacha komalam acharet pragyo dharmam bhagavatan iha Dolabam manusam janma tarapi adruvam artadam. Extra points for anybody who can chant the verse without looking, with their eyes closed. So we'll know you're really, okay? Let's see who really knows their Bhagavatam. Okay. Hare Krishna. Sri Paradu Vacha. Ragyo. Dharmam Bhagavatam Iha Dulabam Manusham Janma. Extra points for Achita. Sorry. Anybody else? Prema Sankatan, cheating as usual. Anybody else from the men? You can look. I mean, you don't have to chant it without looking. You can also look. Shri Paradu Vacha Komanara Charet Pagyo Dharmam Bhagavataniha Durlabam Manusam Janma Talapiya Dhruvam Artadam. Uvacha. Dharmam Bhagavataniha. Nurlabham Manusam Janma. Talapiya Dhruvam Artadam. Vaishnavis. Shri Paladu Vacha. Shri Paladu Vacha. Prahlad Maharaj said, Komara, in the tender age of childhood, Acharet should practice. Pragya, one who is intelligent. Dharman, occupational duties. Bhagavatam, which are devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iha, in this life, Durlabham, very rarely obtained, Manusam, human, Janma, birth, Tat, that, Api, even, Adruvam, impermanent, temporary, Artadam, full of meaning. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful, because in human life, one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. Purport. The whole purpose of Vedic civilization and of reading the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service in the human form of life. According to the Vedic system, therefore, from the very beginning of life, the Brahmacharya system is introduced so that from one's very childhood, from the age of 5 years, one can practice modifying one's human activities so as to engage perfectly in devotional service. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 40, Svalpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Modern civilization, not referring to the verdicts of Vedic literature, is so cruel to the members of human society that instead of teaching children to become brahmacharis, it teaches mothers to kill their children even in the womb, on the plea of curbing the increase of population. And if by chance a child is saved, he is educated only for sense gratification. Gradually, throughout the entire world, human society is losing interest in the perfection of life. Indeed, men are living like cats and dogs, spoiling the duration of their human lives by actually preparing to transmigrate again to the degraded species among the 8,400,000 forms of life. The Krishna Conscious Movement is anxious to serve human society by teaching people to perform devotional service, which can save a human being from being degraded again into animal life. As already stated by Prahlad Maharaj, Bhagavat Dharma consists of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Parasevanam Arjanam Vandanam Dasyam Shakyam Atmanivedanam. In all the schools, colleges, and universities, and at home, all children and youths should be taught to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, they should be taught to hear the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, to put them into practice in their lives, and thus become strong in devotional service, free from fear of being degraded to animal life. Following the Bhagavad Dharma has been made extremely easy in this age. The Shastras say, Hadeyanama, Hadeyanama, Hadeyanama eva kevalam, kalo nasti eva nasti eva nasti eva gatiranyata. One need only chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Everyone engaged in the practice of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will be completely cleansed from the core of his heart and be saved from the cycle of birth and death. Om Aginati Mananda Shah Jananjana Shalakara Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So Prabhupada says here that Bhagavad Dharma has been made extremely easy in this age of Kali. And of course, the reason for that is if it wasn't being made extremely easy, nobody would be able to do it at all because, you know, people are extremely degraded. So out of his causeless and boundless mercy, Krishna, appearing as Lord Chaitanya, has made it extremely easy to give the very fallen people of the Kali Yuga a chance to, you know, do something spiritually beneficial with their lives. Because otherwise people have no idea. What to speak of practicing Bhagavad Dharma, people have no idea of what it is. I mean, you know, if you walk up to the common man on the street and you try to start talking to him the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they just, you know, it's like, what? It's, you know, it's totally like, you know, the knowledge of spiritual, even knowledge of spiritual concepts in general now is really fading. I mean, you know, probably 20 years ago you could talk to somebody about how the soul continues on to another body, but you know, like now it's like, really? It's, people are really becoming more and more ignorant as time goes on, as Kali Yuga progresses, and so what to speak of practicing spiritual life? Even their general knowledge of what spiritual life is fading into oblivion, basically. So anyway, so to this end, it's, the process has been made extremely easy as, you know, concession for the fallen people of the Kali Yuga. And so that's where we come into the picture, basically. You know, we have to just try to put it out there. You know, try to put the information out there. And some fortunate people will take. Because after all, you know, if you just analyze it in terms of our philosophy, human life, as we're just hearing here, is an opportunity for self-realization. So as Krishna is not allowing a soul to come to the human form of life just to set him up, you know, to engage in innumerable sinful activities so he can go to hell for, you know, God knows how long. I mean, obviously, that's not what Krishna's purpose is in bringing a soul to the human form of life. Krishna brings a soul to the human form of life after transmigrating through, you know, the 8,400,000 species, which takes a long time. He brings a soul to the human form of life to give that soul a chance, to give that soul an opportunity. You know, it's kind of like Krishna's way of saying, okay, here's your chance, good luck. I hope you do well, you know, because every soul has the free will. So it's Krishna trying to give the soul a chance. So, you know, logically, it makes sense that people should be able to engage in devotional service. And it's not hopeless. As ignorant as people are of the philosophy, as covered over and materialistic as they are, still, it makes sense that we should be able to engage some people in devotional service, if not completely, at least partially. You know, because why? Because that's the purpose of the human form of life. You know, and they do have love of Krishna deep down inside their heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sabhu Kabanaya Shravanadi Sutta Chitta Koyodaya. That, you know, pure love of Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity, and it has to be awakened by the process of hearing and chanting. So there will be people, as we've already, you know, as we're experiencing, as we've already seen, who will take to Krishna consciousness. And once again, as I said, if not totally, partially. And Prabhupada's making the point here in his purport that even if they take to it partially, that's significant. You know, and he quotes that verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Nehabhikamanastasti Pachavaya. How's it going? How's it start off? Yeah, Nehabhikamanastasti Pachavaya Nevijate Swapam Api Yashadharma Shatrayate Mahatobaya. That in this endeavor, there's no loss of diminution. even a little bit of advancement protects one from the most dangerous type of fear, which is Prabhupada sort of, you know, mentions here. And the purport is, after gaining the human form of life, once again descending into the lowest species of life. So even if somebody engages in a little bit of devotional service, they're protected from that. And in their next lifetime, they will be able to take up from where they left off. They'll have another opportunity to engage in devotional service. Okay? So, and even if they, yeah, so if they can just like see the chanting, hear the chanting from the chanting party, get a book, take some prasadam. It's been a while since I've boned up on these statements, but I'm pretty sure there are statements to the effect that if they do any one of those things, they can get into the human body in their next life. Just on the strength of having taken some prasadam, on the strength of hearing the chanting, on the strength of getting a book from a devotee. See? And if they can get a human body, then they can continue their devotional service. And they could just make progress. You know, it's stated someplace, I think one of the Puranas, Prabhupada was asked, where's that statement that about the golden age of Lord Chaitanya? And Prabhupada said, oh, one of the Puranas. You know, wasn't sure. But the idea is that the golden age of Lord Chaitanya, which started 500 years ago, lasts for 10,000 years. So we're 500 years into it, which means there's another 9,500 years left. Okay? So if you do the math, let's say an average human lifetime, let's calculate it at 50 years. Okay? So 50 years for an average human lifetime, and you got 9,500 years left. That means you got 190 human lifetimes left before the end of the golden age of Lord Chaitanya. See? So in other words, say somebody buys a book, takes some prasadam, hears the chanting, does something so that some little devotional service so they can get another human birth again, and they can continue on. And they got 190 births that day, you know, until the end of the golden age there. And Prabhupada was asked by Allen Ginsberg, what will happen at the end of the golden age? Well, the chanting, he said, that'll be, Prabhupada said, that'll be the end of the chanting. And he says, what about your followers? He said, they'll be back home, back to Godhead already. See, so this is a window of opportunity, the next 9,500 years, you know, in which people could have like another 190 human births. So, once again, even if they don't take to it fully, we shouldn't be disappointed. We shouldn't feel that, oh, we failed, you know, we haven't made so many full-on devotees. Just the fact that they've taken a little bit of devotional service, engaged a little bit in devotional service, that's going to be enough to carry them on to another human body, and then they can continue on. They'll get another opportunity in the next lifetime to, you know, take up, continue, make further progress. And hopefully they'll make enough progress so that by the end of this golden age of Lord Chaitanya, they'll be able to go back home, back to Godhead. And of course, though, you know, there will be some very fortunate souls who will take to it fully. But as we understand from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, those souls are kind of rare. Manushyanam sahasresu kaschid yati siddhaya yathatam api siddhanam kaschid mam vedatatva. That of many thousands among men, one may endeavor perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, only one actually, you know, will take up devotional service like that. But still, it's no cause for discouragement. You know, they'll be there. Some people, some fortunate souls will take it up fully like we have. And in any event, we should preach as a matter, like as a regulative principle. Just like, you know, we chant 16 rounds every day. It's a regulative principle. You wouldn't think of not doing it. I mean, you take that vow at the time of initiation, I'll chant 16 rounds every day. Prabhupada, you know, actually had everybody make that promise and follow the four regulative principles. So what I'm suggesting is in the same way, we should have some sort of like, some preaching activity that we're involved in, and we should execute it as a regulative principle. Whether it's book distribution, Harinam, Prashanam distribution, preaching to guests. And it's like everybody should just kind of fix it up in their head that, okay, I got to be doing something to try to help spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And you just think of it as a regulative principle. You just do it. Like, I don't think I'll chant my 16 rounds if I feel blissful. You know, feel blissful or feel miserable. I don't, you know, I'm going to chant 16 rounds. Whatever the outcome, whatever, however I feel, whatever, you know, it's just a regular, it's something I'm going to do. It's a duty, and I'm going to do it, whether it makes me feel happy or sad or whatever. You know, so in the same way, we should have that same attitude towards preaching, that I'm going to do some sort of preaching, Harinam, Prasadam distribution, book distribution, preaching to, you know, preaching to the members of the congregation or new guests that come. And I'm just going to do it as a matter of duty. And if some good result comes from that, or if I feel happy from that, if some good result, wonderful. If not, okay, so what? It's just, you do it as a matter of duty. You know, just using that example, just like the chanting of the 16 rounds. So that's important. And this is not some concoction. I mean, this is actually what, you know, if you really study the scriptures a bit, this is Lord Chaitanya's program. I mean, Lord Chaitanya, during the time of Lord Chaitanya, it's mentioned in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, where Bhaktivinoda Prabhupada includes that sketch of Lord Chaitanya's brief biography of Lord Chaitanya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he sent all the devotees out. You know, Haridas Thakur went out preaching. Lord Nityananda went out preaching. You know, they were big shots. But everybody, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that point that everybody did their regular bit of, you know, going out and preaching. See? So that's it's just part of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, that everybody, as a matter of principle, you know, does that as a matter of duty. And and you know, as you noticed, when I was talking about preaching, I was talking about prasadam distribution, harinam, and preaching to the guests, and not just book distribution. I mean, that's my service, book distribution, but you know, I don't see that as, like, that's not the only type of preaching. And it's not like if you can't sell a book to somebody, then you know you're not a preacher. Actually, to be honest with you, my observation is, but yeah, book distribution plays a very integral part of making devotees. Because after I skipped ahead there. Why are we preaching? We're preaching because we want to make devotees. Okay, yeah, it's a fact. Distributing books is a very important part of making devotees, but it's not the only. It's not the exclusive factor. You know, I mean, if you do a survey, you'll see that, you know, people who come as a result of getting a book, usually it's not that and that only. It's a combination of factors. Like, you know, take for instance our Sonny right here, okay? One of the most recent devotees to join the community. Okay, he got a book. He got a book from Sri Balaba. Everybody knows Sri Balaba here? Dr. Gamalkar Sri Balaba? Most of the devotees know. He's a, you know, chiropractic, works on a lot of the devotees. Anyway, he got a book from him 3 years ago when he went to his clinic or surgery. And that was a Science of Self-Realization. And he read that and he really liked it. But, you know, he needed to come in contact with the devotees. He met Bhakta Eric and Bhakta Brian at Cerritos University. And they gave him another book, Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Part 1. And then the next day, I saw him walking around the campus holding, you know, with that book. And I said, hey, where'd you get that? And I started talking to him. And then I passed him on to Kavi Chandra Swami, you know, and then he preached to him a bit. And then we brought him back here. And then Bhakta Eric, you know, bonded with him further. And then Acharya Narottam. It's like, you know, there's that saying by Chanaka Pandit, it takes, how's it go? Somebody, you know, takes a village. How's it? Somebody know it? Yeah, it takes a whole village to register. So in the same way, this is like it's a team effort. Making devotees is a team effort. And sometimes I'm reminded of, like, you know, this thing. When you're a kid, I used to watch wrestling on television. They had this thing, tag team wrestling. You know, you'd have one guy in there and he'd be wrestling with the other guy. And then when he got tired, he would just, if he could just reach out far enough to tag the other member, you know, then that guy would jump in and then he'd be the, you know, person who wrestles the person. So it's like that. We just have to, it needs to be a combined effort. I know that that day I brought Sonny back from Cerritos College, that was it. You know, I preached him out there and I preached him on the way back and I was done. My time, energy, and inspiration were exhausted. But fortunately, you know, we have a whole community. So I just threw him in the Bhakti house and they took it from there and they worked him over. We're still working them over, but we're making progress. But so it's a team effort, you know. It's a team effort making devotees, and the preaching, you know, the actual preaching of the devotees is a very important part of it. You know, it's a very important part of it. So anyway, so I just want to say that to encourage devotees that, you know, if you're not distributing books, okay, that's okay. It's nice to distribute books, and it's nice to be able to, you know, distribute a book and get a donation for it, but that's not the only type of preaching. I mean, I know myself. I got Prabhupada's books. I got, I can't remember the sequence, whether I got a Bhagavad Gita first or it was On the Way to Krishna, Journey to Easy Journey to Other Planets and Beyond Birth and Death. But those are the first books I got. And then I got a Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And I liked what was in the books. I was attracted by what I was reading. You know, I really liked it. But it wasn't until I had to meet the devotees. And I had to experience the devotees trying to be kind to me. And that's what did it. You know, I met a devotee, Bhakta Peter. I don't know where he is now. And I saw him when I got back to the temple. But shortly after that, I never saw him again. But I could feel him and I could sense, wait a second, this guy is trying to be kind to me. And when I came to the temple, it was the same thing. I met Brajendranandana, another, you know, God brother, Prabhupada disciple. He was very kind to me. He introduced me to Mother Diva Shakti. She was very kind to me. And I could feel that. I could feel that, hey, these people, you know, they want me to be a devotee. They want me to join. They want me to be around here, you know. And that was very important, you know. And then even after I joined, the continued kindness, you know, that's feeling that these people are trying to be kind to me. That was what enabled me to, that sustained me, actually. You know, because, I mean, not everybody gets it just like that. I mean, like our Surapabu here, he came to the temple. The first day he came to the temple, they sent him on book distribution. And the next day they made him the Sankirtan leader, isn't it? Something like that. Pretty close. See? So some people, you know, take to it like a duck takes to water. But for others of us, it takes a bit of time. And I was in that category. But, you know, the continued sustained effort of different devotees being kind to me, Vishnu Gada, Ramapad, now Maharaj, you know, there's a whole bunch of different devotees, actually, like, I mean, you know, a long list of different devotees who just, I could feel, hey, wait, these people, you know, they're just trying to be kind to me. So, okay, I mean, I like what I'm reading in the books and the people are being nice to me. So, yeah, I'll stay. I'll keep trying. And, you know, it took a while, but I feel like, you know, I'm not a success story or anything like that, but I've been around for a while, distributed a bunch of books. It probably was a good investment of their time and energy. So, so of course we're doing that already here in this temple, you know, and it's really nice to see what's going on here in New Dwarka. Everybody's aware of it, but we have four Harinams that go out here every week. There's four Harinam parties, and I'd just like to say a little something about that because, you know, some of you are like newer to the community, so you might not be aware of the history of the whole thing. There was a point back, I don't know whether it was, but say like 5 years ago, for argument's sake, plus or minus, when the Harinam was in danger of fading into oblivion. You know, it was really kind of, it was like a real non-event. And sometimes devotees were going out, sometimes they weren't going out. And, you know, Jai Gauranga took an interest in it, and he kind of, so that was heading it up for a while, he generated some more interest in it. And then he got help from Govinda Dutt, and then at some point Ganesh got interested in it, and then boom. And then it's really, you know, now we got four Harinams going out. And the newest one is this one on Sunday evening, after the Sunday feast program. And it might be even the biggest one. You know, Ganesh is getting like, you know, upwards of 35 people going out on it. And, you know, they're all here. It's a real stroke of genius if you stop and think about it. Because the people are already here, you know, and they're not going to, it's so easy for them to just kind of like, okay, what the heck. And they just go out locally to the local area here. And it's a very blissful Harinam. And the only bad part about it is it wakes me up every night when it comes, you know, every Sunday when it comes, because I haven't been going on it. But at 9:30 when it returns, it just, those of us who are sleeping in the parking lot there, they wakes everybody up. Well, that's okay. It's worth dealing with that. It's, you know, I don't mind that. It's a small price to pay for having such a, you know, a nice preaching program. So, you know, that's going on. And just in general, you know, this temple is actually a very wonderful arrangement because, you know, this temple supports preaching. Like, you know, just as I said, my service is book distribution. And, you know, there's never any pressure on us. You know, we don't feel, among the book distributors, we never have, none of the book distributors ever have any pressure on us to, you know, collect a certain amount of Lakshmi. I mean, the most of us ask us to do is, okay, well, you know, see if you can cover your expenses, pay for the books and, you know, pay for the ongoing expenses. So we're being subsidized, you know, and it's like a principle of New Dwarka. So in other words, like a lot of very mature devotees are working very responsibly at different things such as the gift shop and the restaurant to generate income, and now the DD department is actually becoming a you know, profit center by the, you know, the very forward thinking of Vaininath Prabhu and his good wife, Radha group of my, they came up with different ideas, and they're getting, like, you know, sponsors for Prashadam now, for Mahaprashadam. And, you know, so Lakshmi is coming in different ways, and it enables us to get out there and really give these people a chance to have books, you know, even if they can't, you know, give the proper donation form, which a lot of students, at least, because we're dealing with a lot of students these days, aren't in a position to do that. So once again, you know, it's like we were doing really well in so many different ways already. I'm not, you know, trying to, I don't, you know, the last thing I want to do is have that mood of like, yeah, we should, you all should be doing this, you know. It's we're doing so many things nice already. I mean, it's so nice to see on the last few Sundays, I noticed we had like probably 100 devotees down at Breakfast Prashadam in the Prashadam Hall. You know, and it's just such a nice feeling to go in there and there's 100 devotees just, you know, all down there and relaxed and happy and ready to take prashadam and, you know, chatting with each other. It's really makes you feel good, you know, makes you feel like, wow, something's happening here. You know, we're finally getting somewhere. And Sunday feast program last night, it was like, you know, super packed. I'm serving out prashadam. We ran out of, you know, the prep, I was serving the sweet rice. We ran out about, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through. It's, you know, I mean, so people are responding in a nice way. So I think, you know, just what we need to do now is we need to tell the people, or, you know, the congregation, people who are coming, that, you know, hey, just in case you didn't know it, you can also preach. You know, get them involved in the preaching. Many hands make light work. You know, Vaisheshika works according to that principle. That was, you know, his, the basic idea of this whole, you know, the weekend warrior thing, he's, or the monthly Sankirtan festival, is that we got to get these people involved. They're obviously, they're coming, they're favorable, they think of themselves as devotees, and we have to, you know, let them know that, you know, actually you can do some preaching. Prabhupada did that. You know, if you go back and you listen to the 1966 Bhagavad Gita lectures Prabhupada gave, practically in the first Bhagavad Gita lecture Prabhupada was giving, he was telling people you have to preach. They weren't even devotees. They had no commitment to Krishna consciousness. They were just first being introduced to the philosophy. But simultaneously, Prabhupada was giving them that encouragement, that instruction, that you should also, part of the whole package is preaching. So, you know, we should do that, trying to, you know, develop that culture, that part of being a devotee means, even if you're just like, somebody who's coming as a guest and not like a full-time living in the temple kind of person, you could still do some preaching. You know, point out to them, we can make books available to your temple course price. You know, there's different ways in which you can do some nice preaching and bring people back to the restaurant, invite people, bring your friends. When you come to the temple, come with a friend. Come hungry, bring a friend. You know, we should have a slogan. We should have a banner, you know, something. Push that. Come hungry, bring a friend. Imagine if all the people are coming now, just bring one friend. So immediately, the attendance jumps from 500 to 1,000. And if the next week, each one of those 1,000 people that come bring one friend, you got 2,000. Next thing you know, we're going to have to buy the Masonic Lodge next door and, you know, expand or whatever. But, yeah, like that, that's important, you know, that everybody be made to feel that they can preach. You know, they don't have to sell a book. They can, you know, just bring a friend. How hard is it to bring a friend to a temple? Is that hard? I don't think so. I think anybody could do that. You know, everybody must have a friend. Just bring a friend. So in this way, you know, we can sort of increase the preaching. Let's see if I have anything else to say here. Anyway, that's kind of pretty much it. But just, you know, just going back to that, you know, that I was mentioning about from my own example, the Brooklyn Temple, there was definitely a culture there. It wasn't like, I don't remember ever being sat down and somebody told me, instructed me, preach to the new devotees, be kind to the new devotees. Nobody ever instructed me, but that was 100% what was going on. 100% that was what was going on. You know, that people were preaching to each other. And even like, I remember one devotee, Vishnu Gadar, for instance, he was only one or two years older than me, and he'd been a devotee one or two years longer. But he, you know, he just kind of like took it upon himself to take me under his wing and, you know, preached to me, sat me down, taught me bhajans, and took me out on Sankirtan. You know, there was that feeling there of like, okay, protecting. You know, I have to protect you. You're just a young person and a young devotee. And it was nice. You know, it was the culture. You know, as I said, I don't remember anybody instructing me to do like that, but I could see that definitely was what everybody was doing. So that's a nice mood, you know. It's a nice mood. And, you know, it just creates a good feeling, and people want to be in a place where that kind of thing is going on. And so I think that's what we, you know, we want to sort of, we're already doing good. You know, once again, I'm not trying to like criticize what's going on already. So I think it's wonderful what's going on already. And I think if, you know, that's a direction we could try to move in even more, you know, developing that culture of like being really friendly to our guests, being really kind, you know, just going out of the way, our way a little bit to try to help somebody come to Krishna consciousness. As, once again, as I said, if I didn't get that, I wouldn't be here. I got help. You know, I wasn't like Sura, who, you know, first day was a Sankirtan, and second day was a Sankirtan leader. It took me a while to get the hang of it, you know. And I had help over the, you know, the first 2 or 3 years I was a devotee, for a lot of different devotees, just kind of, you know, saying, okay, this guy's not quite getting it. And they're going to put a little extra time and energy into him, and they did. And, you know, some, by their mercy, I was able to still be around. So anyway, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions? Archdeepu, yeah.
Why was that the case, that culture was there? And obviously, it came from Srila Prabhupada. As you mentioned, even in 66, he was preaching that others should preach. He wasn't saying that I'm the only preacher. You all have to preach. And that mood was there. But another aspect of that is the personal side of it. When you have attachment to a person and you want to please that person, and that's the mood that I felt right away when I came to that same temple. Everybody wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. The first time I came, there was so much activity. They were painting and building a new Vyasa sign, and immediately I got the idea that whoever they're preparing for, this is a very special person, because everybody's focused on pleasing that person. Everything they're doing, cleaning, painting, building, it's all to satisfy this one person. So when you have that personal connection, that desire to satisfy a person, that motivates you. If you don't have that, if you don't catch up that desire to please a person, and that's what the guru-disciple relationship is supposed to be. You have a personal guide, and you want to please that guide, and you feel obligated to do that. First, out of a sense of duty, maybe not so much love in the beginning, but as you were saying, you do things dutifully because you want to please that person.
God, thank you. Such an honor. Do you want to say something? Yes, Sachi.
Thank you, Prabhu. This is a little bit different, Prabhu, but it's in relation to the verse. Prahlad Maharaj is given emphasis and importance of human life and how, since being a child, you can, you know, like he was preaching to his schoolmates, making the emphasis that it's almost like a waste of time being in school. And even to the point that at one time, Prabhupada, in one part of the scriptures, he says that material education is like a slaughterhouse. But I was wondering, since we are a preaching movement, and we do need leaders in the society who are well-educated, materially speaking. And as you know, there's a devotee in Hawaii whose name is Tulsi, and she is a congress. So I wonder if you could spend in that and how important it is to include Krishna in their education for most of our children who are going out there in school now anyways. Most of the Hare Krishna's, you know, children, they're being educated out there.
Well, okay, I mean, I'll give you what I think about it. I mean, someone obviously has a lot of different answers, but it's true that this young lady, she's not that young, she's 31 years old, she got elected to United States Congress. She's a follower of Siddha Supranandha. Her father was an initiated disciple. Krishna Katha was his name. I kind of researched a little on the internet. And she's apparently, I don't know if she's initiated, but she's also there. And Siddha Supranandha is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He broke away from ISKCON in 1977, but his teachings are essentially the same. You know, he teaches chanting Hare Krishna, following the regular principles like that. You know, they're basically, I mean, there's probably obviously some differences, but you know, she's a Vaishnav, and she identifies herself as such, but, you know, she's like an exception. That's rare. In general, my observation is it's very difficult for kids who get schooled outside to come out Krishna conscious. It's just hard, you know? I mean, like, I don't know if Prabhupada gave this example, but the example is there, like, with the, you know, like when you plant a new tree or something like that, you have to, insulate it. You have to protect it. You have to give it protection, especially in its, you know, early stages of growth. Otherwise, some animal, you know, will come along and, you know, just devour it or stomp all over it. You know, you've got to put a fence around it. And then, you know, once it becomes a little bit of a tree or something like that, then okay, you know, it can fend for itself. But in the early stages, you have to really protect the children. And because if they're subjected to that outside influence, which they will be if they go to karmi schools, it can just destroy them. I know, I mean, to be honest with you, my own example, my son, I have a son, previous marriage. And up until he was 8 years old, he was kind of in the association of the devotees, and he went to Gurukul in New Zealand for a few, two or three years or something like that, and then he went to Vrindavan Gurukul for a year. But he had a learning difference, so now they call it, you know, disability learning difference, dyslexia. It's kind of difficulty manipulating symbols. It makes it harder for a kid to read and harder for a kid to do math and stuff like that. I mean, Albert Einstein supposedly was dyslexic, so was Nelson Rockefeller. So it's not like, you know, you can still get it together, but it becomes harder. So anyway, so it was, that was becoming, a, you know, it was created a difficulty. It was difficult for the Gurukul system, which didn't know anything about that type of thing back in that time, to do anything, to work with them. You know, so we actually put him in a school that specialized in teaching kids with that learning disability, dyslexia. And they did a good job. He learned how to read. He learned how to do math. And in the process, he has no interest in Krishna consciousness. He just became a karmi, basically. You know, he's made all friends with all the karmi kids. He started, you know, doing all the same stuff they did on the internet, the video games and this and that. You know, just because he was associating with all karmi kids. And, you know, the people, that was his association. So just his interest just, you know, disappeared, basically. And his mother also decided not to be a devotee any longer. So that nailed them. That was like hammering the nails in the coffin, so to speak. So, you know, his point being that the association is so essential. It's so important. You know, if you get a kid that and they don't get the right association, and we've seen it in this community. You know, so many of our children in this community who have been gone mainstreamed and gone to, it's hard. They haven't, you know, they're trying. They like that. You know, you can see they're good kids and they want to be devotees, but they've just got to have, they've had a lot of bad association, and it's hard for them to deal with that. It's, you know, it's a long subject, but I mean, you get the idea there. But we've seen some good examples too of kids being homeschooled and coming out very successfully. So I think it's very important to, if you don't have a Gurukul, I think it's important to, for some arrangement, you know, for the parents to either homeschool the kid or make some sort of group homeschooling, or, because it's just hard for these kids if they have to go to the regular schools to, you know, to do that and be, maintain their, you know, their devotional inclinations. There are exceptions, you know, and that, and the parents play an important part of that. The parents give them a lot of good association when they're home and a lot of encouragement. But, you know, a lot of times the parents are kind of pretty full on with their own lives as well. And anyway, it's hard. It's very difficult. So I think the more we could do for the kids, and, you know, that was Prabhupada's idea to have a Gurukul, then the better it is for them. And I think we should try to do as much as we can to try to protect the children from being subjected to what's out there, which is not going to help them at all. And even in their material life, what the speaker in their spiritual life. Anybody else? Back to Anthony.
In the very beginning you said that older people cannot take up spiritual life, but I've heard many times before that anyone could, either young or old, could start chanting and feel major benefit from it. I was just wondering.
Yeah, I read that. That was the chapter. Prabhupada said that in the chapter introduction. But that's true. There's no material impediment, and you know, it's kind of like the causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Anybody could engage in devotional service. That's a fact. But at the same time, simultaneously, it is true. It's like, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. You know, it's a fact. I mean, you'll experience that as you get older. I'm experiencing that now. You don't learn the same way. It just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't stick. You know, it's kind of harder to learn things, and when you learn them, you forget them easier, and even with the speak of learning new things, even things you knew, you start forgetting. So it is really, that's not just like, you know, memorizing things, but just old habits, and it's just harder. It's harder for older people to change their ways. Actually, I'll give you two examples of that from Prabhupada. Prabhupada was informed that Maharishi Mahasyogi, he was, you know, famous yogi, and one of his followers, one of his like close followers, asked him about, you know, what is the highest teaching. So one day he told him, he said, if you want the highest teaching, you have to go to Krishna consciousness. Maharishi actually told him that. So this boy did, Bhakta Dug. he became, you know, he joined the movement. I don't know what happened to him in the long run, but he joined the movement. And so at one point he was saying to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, should we try to go back and preach to, you know, Maharishi to, you know, to preach Krishna consciousness? Because he's acknowledging that it's the highest thing. And Prabhupada said, no, you preach. He said he's enunciated his way, you know, because he was an older person, Maharishi. He's, you know, he's enunciated his way, and it'd be very difficult for him to change. He said, you preach. So you know, and also Prabhupada was once asked, I think maybe it was in the airport, I can't remember where it was. He says, why is it that just young people are joining the new movement? And he says, why is it that, and then Prabhupada answered that person's question with a question, says, why is it that young people are going to school? And the reporter answered, well, because that's the age for education. He said, you know, that's the age for learning, young, when you're young. And Prabhupada says, oh, similarly, that's it. He said, you answered your own question. So it's just, that's just, you know, it's that's the way it works. You know, it's just, it's when you're younger, it's easier to learn things. I mean, look how kids learn languages. It's, you know, forget it. They could just, it's like, you know, like a sponge. They just, you know, it's so easy for young people to learn languages. And when you get older, to learn languages, it's like pulling teeth. It's so difficult, unless you're somebody really exceptional, you know. So it's just, that's just the nature of the thing. That's the way it works. It is easy to learn things when you're younger, including Krishna consciousness. Anyway, I'll stop there. It's already getting late. Thank you very much. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada.